add some cosmetic upgrades and curb appeal, and with that you can raise rent by $25 to $50 upon acquisition. But at the same time, you have to do the things that you promised your tenants that you're going to do to make their place a more beautiful to live in.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. I got another great guest for you today. But before I get into that, housekeeping as always, if you got value out of the show, please share it with someone who you know could also get value. That's how we grow the show, how I get in front of more people, because my mission to help people get into this awesome asset class, to grow their wealth, to grow their cash flow so they can create the lives of their dreams and they can pursue their passions. I feel like when we live a life with purpose, passion, it just motivates us and drives us to just create bigger and better things for the world and to give back. And that's what I'm trying to do with this podcast. So the only way to do that is to get in front of more people. So if you could share this with someone who you think could get something out of this, and also leave a rating and review if you have not, and subscribe, because that's how we also get in front of more people. All right. Today's guest, Charlotte Dunford. We're going to be talking all things mobile home parks. This is a subject I don't know a lot about. I know a little, but not a lot. And also a subject I've never had on this show before. We started from acquisition, from how do you find a deal? How do you finance that deal? How do you set up that capital stack? How do you take it down? All things operations, what kind of value add you can do, and then your exit strategy. We talk all that, why she believes it's a sound investment. It was a really fun conversation. She had a lot of information, a lot of insightful strategies. And also, she's just an impressive young lady. She is 29 years old and has 28 mobile home parks. And she's already sold one as well. She's gone full cycle. And yeah, we just talk all things mobile home park. And I think you're going to get a lot out of this. So if you're interested in this asset class, I would definitely listen to this episode. Take some notes, because she does offer a lot of great information on how to get started, how to really win in this asset class. All right, everybody, let's welcome Charlotte. Hey, Charlotte, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and thank you for taking time out of your day. So let's get right into it. Tell the audience who Charlotte is and what you're up to these days.
Sounds good. My name is Charlotte Dunford. I am a partner at Johns Creek Capital, a private equity group that focuses on mobile home park acquisition and value add. So far, we have acquired 28 acquisitions, and since we started in 2020, so we've really been rapidly growing, still looking to get more parks moving forward. And our niche is in the small to medium level mobile home parks, which are usually smaller in size, but a little bit higher in the cap rate when we go into the park. So that's kind of a unique competitive advantage that we have. Yeah, so that's in a nutshell who we are.
What's considered small to medium?
So anything above 100 lots is considered a bigger park. So small to medium is anything but below that.
Okay, great. And so I wonder if is it similar to multifamily, where different tranches of competition as you go above that 100 versus below? Is it kind of the bigger players probably stay above at the 100 plus because the scale, and then smaller operators, probably mom and pop, have like one, maybe two parks, and then you're probably, is it fair to say that there's not as much competition of your size in terms of 28 parks?
I would say that at our size, the competition is getting more fierce. When we started in 2020, the competition was not as bad. As mobile home parks are getting more and more popular, investors are putting more attention into this asset class, and people are turning it into this asset class. I would say even in our space, I think things are getting more heated.
Okay. If you don't mind, let's just run through, because like I want to learn about it as well, and I'm sure some of the listeners do too, because I don't know much about mobile home parks. But let's just walk through, like, generically speaking, obviously, like, whole acquisition process from finding it, getting financing on it, raising capital for it, operating it, and so on. So let's start off with finding it. How do you guys find your deals? Are they through brokers? Is it direct to seller? And that could obviously be mailers, cold calling. How do you guys find your deals?
Yeah, similar to how you find a multifamily deal, mobile home parks have their own ecosystem and their own you know, set of brokers, realtors, and people who work in the industry. So we definitely get deals from brokers that we've worked with before or haven't worked with before, and definitely sellers that we've already bought parks from. They usually own more than one park. And if there are other parks that the seller is interested in selling, we definitely want to hear about it. And we're usually just on a daily hunt for new deals all across different sources, either it's online or through our broker relationships, seller relationships, and people in the industry.
Okay. For your buy box, like I know it's less than 100, but to go furthermore, I know a little bit about mobile home parks. I know that you can either just own the land and the pads, but not own the homes. And I know you can either have sewer and utility directly from the city, or that can all be maintained. What is kind of your buy box when it pertains to those factors?
Right. So there are 15 major parameters that we look at when thinking about a mobile home park. So size is only one of them. It's not really that strict of criteria. And a lot of parks are not above the 100 lot, and there are a lot of parks out there. So one of the most important parameters that we look at is actually, like you mentioned, the land versus the homes, right? So we don't want to be in the rental business. So it's more of a parking lot business. That's the closest asset class that I can think of that's comparable to mobile home parks is a parking lot. So in a parking lot, you don't own the cars parked on the lots, right? You don't want to own them. You're not in the fixing trucks, fixing cars business. You're not in a car dealership business. You are in a parking lot business. So it's the same in mobile home parks. We want to own the land underneath the home, not the homes themselves, because the homes are really a headache and they have a lot of repairs and maintenance expenses. And a lot of them are approaching their life cycle. And a lot of the homes are really old, built in the 70s and 80s. And now it's 40-year-old home. So you have to deal with that. So owning mostly tenant-owned home is the goal, what number one parameter here. So by tenant-owned homes, we just mean, as the name indicates, is the tenant owns them, right? We don't own them. On the opposite side of that is a park-owned home. A park-owned home indicates the park owns them and take over the title after the transaction. And that's the number one rule, is that we try to stay away as much as possible from a majority park-owned home deal, because we know how much of a headache it is. And it's really not, it doesn't fit this business model of mobile home parks, because we're really not trying to get into the mobile home rental business. It's not really a profitable business under our model. So it's a land base. So that's the number one parameter. And the other boxes that we check, like I said, there are 15 major parameters, but some of the top ones, at least 80% tenant-owned homes in the park and city water, city sewer. Sometimes septic tanks are okay, but when you get into the realm of well water and treatment plants that become private utilities, especially in the case of smaller parks, there's not much you can do, and you don't have enough reserves to make a small deal work with such a expensive utility system to run. So definitely we prefer public utility. So the city is in charge of the water quality, and not to say that that's not expensive. Sometimes it can be expensive if you have a leak anyways, but that's just something that we prefer. And also, you know, who pays for utilities? And one of the value add in mobile home parks is that you can bill back the utilities to tenants, or you can sub-meter, but that each one of those options are cost different types of money, and you have to take that into consideration for sure.
That's like a RUBS program at a multifamily.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to jump ahead because we're about to get into the financing, but I'm sure like some lenders prefer city utility and sewer over the other. I bet wouldn't even touch it. I could, correct me if I'm wrong, I would assume that is.
Yes. So it depends on the lender and depends on the buyer, obviously. But I think depending on the size, for a smaller size, for a smaller lender, they definitely don't want to touch something that's private water. And the thing is, there are lots of mobile home parks in the country that are on private utilities, and they do just fine. Not to say that they can't be possible. And there are $20 million deals out there with entirely private sewer system, private treatment plant, lagoon, even private wells. You just have to structure it differently. You just have to be talking to the different lenders. But I think if you're starting out and buying your first park, especially if you're buying a smaller one, I would say stay away from private utilities, because it's just not, simply the scale is not worth it.
That makes sense, yeah. In your experience, what is kind of the mix of park-owned homes versus non-park, like resident-owned homes? I mean, I'm sure there's even a mix in there where you'll buy a park and some of them will be one way and the rest will be the other way.
Yeah. So like I said, we try to focus on parks with at least 80% ten-owned homes. So if they're, let's say the park has 20 lots, at least 16 of them have to be ten-owned homes, and the other four may be park-owned. And it depends on the condition of the park-owned homes too. So if the park-owned homes are completely new from 2020 models, then that's a different story. So they're not that old. They may not require as much repairs and maintenance, and they may be a good moneymaker. So it all depends. But in the majority of the parks across the country, if you're looking at park-owned homes, you're usually looking at pretty old homes, because most homes don't make it out of mobile home parks once they get moved in, because it's extremely difficult to move. So
right. They're mobile on the way to their destination, but not after.
They're not really that mobile. The name is just very misleading, I think.
Right.
But they are mobile. You can't move them, but they're nothing like a car.
Expensive.
It's not that easy.
It might cost you more than the actual home.
And difficult. You got an old home. If you want to move it, you'd be lucky it doesn't shatter while you're moving it. So you have to be careful with that. So most people don't mess with that.
Right. I guess the question I would have, so I get why you would want to own a park that has majority, if not all, resident-owned homes.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the maintenance, right? You just don't want to have to deal with that. That's not the business you're in. That increased your costs. But what about the flip side of that is like, okay, but are the tenants actually going to take care of the homes, right? Have you seen that's the case? Or is it kind of like a pride of ownership type thing?
It's a pride of ownership type thing. Tenants are not going to take care of a park-owned home. Let's just be honest. Like, that's not
that's
their home.
Point.
They don't own it. Why would they, right? So they know that you're going to take care of it. So they don't care if they flush down the toilet, something that they shouldn't be, or put down the sink, that there's something that they shouldn't flush, put through. So you're going to have to pay for the plumbing bill. They don't care. They just give you a call and expect you to fix it. However, on the other hand, if the tenants own them, then they do take pride of ownership because they pay for the home. It's human nature, really, to take care of things that you paid for and worked hard for. So I think you're really dealing with a different clientele when you are dealing with tenant homes versus apartment homes.
Yep.
Because those people do own the homes and they have pride of ownership, and they establish them as some tenants, the people who can take care of some of their finances and be able to qualify for the home. That's different.
Right. Okay. So let's say you've found that perfect mix. Your buy box, you found that park, you put an offer, it's accepted, you get the PSA signed, and now you're going to go get financing. What does financing look like? Can you go to your traditional lenders? What does that all look like?
So most of our parks actually are financed through all cash, private equity, through our investors, or through seller financing.
Okay.
It is a little bit more difficult to get traditional financing, commercial financing on mobile home parks, especially on some of the really big value add deals. So that's why most of the time, we do cash deal or seller financing. So before we even go under contract, usually financing is already settled. You don't have to go to get bank approval. And that just adds another layer of complexity, especially in smaller deals like that. But I'm not saying that a bigger deal, let's say, you know, the deal is $6 million. Obviously, you can do some financing through banks. So we just haven't dealt with that.
Okay. What's the average size, would you say, dollar-wise, acquisition number of what you guys look for?
Dollar amount-wise, we look at anything between, I mean, honestly, we bought things all the way from $120,000 all the way to for $500,000 of assets. So it really depends on the market, depends on NOI, depends on the utility structure. So really, you can't really look at the deal as price per lot, because a lot of times this thing is located in a really heated market, then the price per lot obviously is going to be more expensive. So it boils down to the NOI.
Yeah, of course. And like all commercial. I was just curious, like the dollar size, to get a figure of like a deal structure in terms of if you're all cash. So if it's all cash, what does that structure look like? Do they get an equity position, or is it more of like a hard money, or it's more of like a traditional debt position?
You mean the investors?
Yeah.
Oh, the investors, we follow a waterfall structure. So we have a preferred rate of return, the 8% preferred rate of return to our investors. And once we hit their hurdle, the preferred rate of return renews every year. So investors can be made whole regardless of what the first year performance looks like. So usually the first year, you're looking at about 3-4% cash on cash for investors. However, because we have the 8% preferred rate of return, any deficiency will be caught up in the following year. So, and then it jumps by 4 points every hurdle after the 8% preferred return. It goes up to 12%. And then there's a split of 60-40. And then it goes up to 16%. And there's a split of 50-50, and that renews every year as well. And the only 8% is preferred rate of return. So that's usually, you know, the waterfall. It's really traditional waterfall structure, really,
yep,
we follow.
Yeah. And what's your like hold period? 5 years?
Usually 3 to 5 years. It depends on market conditions. Sometimes the one that we sold this year in May, we bought in June of 2020. So it's only 22 months before we sold it. So we held it for less than 2 years. So we actually bought it for $325,000, sold it for $495,000, meanwhile delivering a 8-9% cash on cash return to our investor throughout the whole time. And then eventually we delivered a 19% IRR and 20% annualized return on that deal.
It's a great return. So they get an equity position where they get a pref and they get a waterfall, and then you have an exit. And you're exiting in 5 years. Is there ever a play to refi? I know you're just using cash or a seller finance.
Yeah, refinancing is always a possibility depending on what the market says and if we can get some of our investors' money out. And obviously, investors like it when they can recover most of their principal and they continue to enjoy the cash flow every month. So yeah, that's always on the table. However, given that the interest rate is getting higher and higher nationwide, one of our first deals actually got for 30% down and 3% interest rate, 30-year amortization, 10-year balloon. So that's really good terms. I don't know if you can refinance into something a better term.
No, not right now.
3%. No, I don't think you can get below 3%. Those are the good terms. And the other, we got 5%. So we already got into very good terms. However, the ones that we got through cash, refinancing is always an option if we have added significant value and we're able to restructure the deal and get investors' principal back and continue to hold it for a longer period of time. Yeah, that's always a possibility. And that's actually something we consider on a regular basis.
So you just mentioned creating value in the property. Could you just go over how you are creating value after you acquire one and through operations?
Right. So one of the first things, very similar to multifamily, you guys do a lot of cosmetic upgrades. And in mobile home parks, the cosmetic upgrades include adding a new fencing, new white fencing to the park and giving it a more of a country feel, or adding a new sign to the park. Sometimes the park don't even have signs. So you get adding a sign, created home feel. So we really wanted to create a neighborhood really for people. So think about yourself as an HOA or a developer for a neighborhood where people actually live in. Place where they call home. So you really want to create a better environment for your residents and make them want to stay at the place. So the first thing you do is to add some cosmetic upgrades and curb appeal. And with that, you can raise rent by $25 to $50 upon acquisition. But at the same time, you have to do the things that you promised your tenants that you're going to do to make their place more beautiful to live in. So I think that's one of the first things. And mobile home parks, lot rents are incredibly low to start with because a lot of mom and pop operators don't raise rent. They're really still catching up to the market rent in many, many markets. So I would say one of the first things is that you can have a small rental increase along with value add activities. Another one, this is more expensive, but it usually adds more value and boosts more NOI is through infilling. And so you have lots that are vacant currently. And what you can do is that you can buy a new home and bring it into the park. And that is kind of an expensive endeavor. Like I said, the moving fees, the mobile home acquisition, you know, fees are very, very high, especially in today's market. I think 2 years ago, there are so many homes on the market that you can buy from. That means their prices were lower, but nowadays, incredibly expensive. So infilling is definitely another big one. Another one is utility bill back. And sometimes if you want to do utility bill back or submetering, you might not want to raise rent as much because that's already some extra cost out of your tenant's pocket. So those are the top three major value adds that you can do at your home park.
Right. And I'm sure that's probably pretty prevalent in terms of being able to do those, because I would assume, and I'll always correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume a lot of the parks you're buying from you're not buying from someone like you who's maybe has a big portfolio, more sophisticated. Is it more like you're buying from mom and pop, or just someone who's just owned them for a long time and really hasn't taken the effort or the time put in and create this value?
I think the most good deals that you want to get from are from mom and pop, because obviously if you buy it from an institutional buyer, the asset is going to be more stabilized and there's not much value add that you can do and you won't be able to make as money, and their pricing is usually pretty expensive. So a lot of times mom and pop or the previous seller just have not done enough value add. So you just have to be able to identify and understand how stabilized you want your asset to be.
Yep. And who's your target buyer when you go to sell?
The target buyer, actually, to take the example of someone that we sold to earlier this year, those people they had some mobile home parks in the area. They're kind of a mom and pop, but they're not a private equity firm like us, they're just a mom and pop and they have some parks in the area. They're just looking to expand their portfolio. So usually looking at smaller buyers, but they're out there and they have the funds to do so. And they're not usually institutional buyers. If you want to sell it to institutional buyers, you might want to combine your parks or make it a bigger deal for them to have the scale.
Yeah, like a big portfolio and then offload it to them. That makes sense.
Right.
I probably should have asked you this question at the beginning, but for those that aren't familiar with mobile home parks as an investment, why would you choose mobile home parks?
Right. As we head into a recession and throughout the past few decades of the entire real estate market in the United States, mobile home park has proven itself to be one of the most recession resilient, recession resistant asset class that's ever existed, because in economic hardship, people are looking for less expensive housing options. And there has always been an affordable housing crisis in our nation. I don't see that problem going away completely anytime soon. And for mobile home park especially, demand is very high and it's ever growing. So when you have demand, there is a business, right? So how does the supply look like? So the matter of fact, supply for mobile home park is that supply is limited because zoning regulations and lots of other legislatures actually do not allow new mobile home park developments to take place. So it's extremely difficult to build new mobile home parks to catch up with the demand. So the demand is high. So one of the biggest reasons someone should look into an investment vehicle is to see whether it makes money, is profitable, right? Is the industry profitable? So overall, I would say industry is very profitable because it really is an affordable housing market, and you're looking to solve a problem in the affordable housing crisis. So you're solving a crisis. So the saying, they say that the bigger the problem you solve, the more money you'll make. So I think we're in it for a very good reason for a very big problem. So that's why someone should consider going to the space, is because it really does solve a big challenge. And when you solve a challenge, that the money will follow. And in this case, like I mentioned, the model that we operate upon, getting at a pretty good cap rate and we add value. And as the mobile home park industry as a whole, the curve goes up, so does the value of your property. So I would say in a recession, in an economically volatile period like we live in today, I think parking your money in mobile home park is going to provide a safety that, to a certain extent, compared to other housing options, other real estate asset classes.
Awesome. And that just triggered a question, because you mentioned as things get tough, people look for more affordable options to live. So let's say there's a vacancy in one of your parks and the person who lived there before left and decides to sell their home. Person who's looking for a more affordable option needs to buy that home. Are there financing options for them, or do they have to pay all cash? Obviously, they could maybe get the seller financing, but besides seller financing, are there other options for them?
Well, usually those homes are only $2,000 or $5,000 if they're going to sell those.
Right.
And so they're pretty cheap to start with. But if they want to buy a new one, let's say the new one costs $50,000, there are financing options out there for people who are home buyers who actually want to buy a mobile home, lending options out there. So they do have bank financing available to them, just like traditional mortgage, but a little bit different, obviously, because the size is a lot smaller, have different criteria. But yeah, they do have that option.
What's more typical, someone buying a used home that's there or buying a new one?
I would say they're pretty similar. We actually haven't had, so that happens when someone moves into your park with a new home or someone who takes over, right? So I would say It just depends on, new homes are getting more and more rare nowadays. So you're probably mostly looking at, for in our case, usually looking at a used home that's already existing in the park. Because eventually, if someone who owns that home leaves and sells to someone else, then obviously that's a used home and you want someone to occupy that place and pay you a lot rent, right? If you have a vacant lot and someone brings in a newer home, then that's a different story. There are home dealers out there making sales all the time. So I would say both are pretty common.
All right. So that's depreciating asset.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads me to the question, you as an investor, do you get depreciation for owning or buying the land?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So for tax purposes and for tax advantages, we depreciate the utility lines. If you have septic tanks, you have electrical poles, if you have a wild house, you have a clubhouse, you have the pedestals, and you have all the structures that stands on your land, that you can depreciate. So giving you tax advantages. And also we have a shorter depreciating period than multifamily housing. So especially the first year.
How many years?
I think it's 15 years.
15, yeah.
It's a lot shorter. So you get to take advantage of the tax benefits, especially the first year after acquisition.
Yeah, with bonus depreciation, you can take all that 15 up front. So with multifamily, you're right. There are portions of the complex or community that is 15 years and you get to take that all up front, but it's not the same portion as it would be for you.
Yes, exactly.
And that's one of my favorite benefits of real estate in general, the tax benefits.
The tax benefits, exactly.
Yeah, when you get your tax return and you're made a good amount of money, but you're in the 0% tax bracket, it kind of feels nice.
It does. Absolutely feels nice. For sure. Yeah.
All right, Charlotte. Well, before I ask the final two questions, where can the listeners find you?
Yeah, the best way to reach out to us, me, is to go to our website at johnscreekcapital.com. I'm sure you put it in the show notes as well. Yep. So there is a contact form on our website, and we usually, once we get your message, we'll reach out within the same day.
All right. Okay. First question. I'm going to change it up a little bit because usually my first question is why your asset class is an investment vehicle, but we just went over that. So I will say, where do you see most people struggle or give up when it comes to starting in this business?
The learning curve. I think most people, as with any business, as with anything that's difficult or challenging, people tend to give up when it gets difficult and challenging. And in this business, I think people give up. I think people tend to give up when they are hit with some challenges and don't see money right away, and they don't see the cash flow return right away, or they're faced with one or two initial failures. Or I would say mobile home parking is quite a tough asset to manage, which is why our past investors have the advantage of not worrying about the management part of it. And we take on the responsibilities of operating and managing. I would say in this industry, if you're starting out and being an active investor, you're operating on your own, I would say most likely to give up when you are hit with a lot of governmental issues, because most of the authorities, governmental authorities, don't like mobile home parks that much. You're going to have to face with cities, counties.
The NIMBY.
Yeah, they're permitting, they're violations, they're going to issue you violations, they're going to fine you, they're going to call you every day to say that you have trash in your yard. That will drive some people to the breaking point, I would say, but you have to have a system set up. You have to understand who you're dealing with. You have to be diplomatic, and it is a tough asset to manage. So you do have to prepare yourself for that.
Yeah. And for those that don't know the term, I just said NIMBY, it means not in my backyard. And there's definitely a lot of people like that when it comes to mobile home parks, which kind of baffles me because it's the same people that argue that we need affordable housing and this is a clear solution to it. But they're like, nope, but not in my backyard. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hypocritical.
Yeah. That's how they make money, and to fine you and give you violations. And fortunately, that's just the reality. You have to deal with them. And if you find a way that others can't find to deal with difficult problem, that's how you make money in almost every industry. Because if something's not challenging, then everybody will want to rush to it, right? And then if everybody rushes to it, there will be lots of competition. And then that becomes the challenge. So you pick your battles.
Hey, Charlotte, the closing of my show, which you're about to hear, starts with easy doesn't pay well. So you hit the nail on the head.
There you go.
All right. Second and last question is, Charlotte, if you had a time machine and you go back in time to younger self, I always ask this because I come from a finance background. Every Friday I do a finance show because it's not about just making good investments and making money, but it's about keeping that money. If you go back in time and talk to your younger self, what is one piece of financial advice you'd give young Charlotte?
See, I'm 29. So if I go back 10 years, I'll be 19. Or let's say go back 5 years, I'll be 24.
So 19, she probably wouldn't listen.
She wouldn't listen, right? She wouldn't listen. So how about try 24, right? 5 years ago. Oh man, 5 years ago, I bought my first rental property, second one in the duplex. So I don't know. She probably wouldn't listen either. I would just tell her that a lot of it is just learning curve, and don't get discouraged, and really just put yourself out there and learn as much as you can. Because if you're young, I consider myself still pretty young, but I think you're really young. Yeah, if you're really young, 25, 24, you're just starting out in your career, just graduate college, I would say is a lot of it just practice, and a lot of it just learning curve, and just learn as much as you can, execute, take action, and don't be afraid to fail, especially if you're young. That's not what I would tell my younger self. That's kind of what I did, but I would continue to tell her the same thing. No regrets. Yeah.
There we go. Fail forward. And as Nike says, just do it.
That's right. That's right. Just do it.
You said you have 28 parks, right?
Yeah.
All right, you need one more to match your age, and then you can just keep going from there. Sure, you want to get more than one a year.
Oh, of course, of course. It may outgrow my age pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, sure, that's impressive. 28 by 29. That's very impressive.
I appreciate it.
Especially in 2 years since 2020. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on. This has been great for me, very insightful for me, and I'm sure the listeners too. So appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. And here comes the closing that I was telling you about. So everybody, as you know, easy doesn't pay well and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you so we can all create the lives of our dreams like Charlotte and I are doing so we can all make this world a better place. All right, I'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.